Now, for our first speaker, this gentleman comes to us from quite a ways away, originally. He is feared by slugs worldwide. He's an assistant professor at the Department of Crop and Soil Science. He has worked on the biology and management of slugs and snails for 15 years through Europe and U.S. His specific interests include the development of biorational molecides, identification of novel attractants, and development of biological control agents for these pests. He's particularly interested in using these approaches in an integrated pest management approach. Please help me welcome my friend, Dr. Rory MacDonald.
Thank you, Donald. Good morning, everybody. Can you all hear me okay? Hello? Better? Good. So good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks to Donnie for the introduction and to the organizing committee for inviting me today to speak to you all. So as Donnie said, I'm the new slug scientist at Oregon State University. And what I'd like to do today is I'd like to spend the next 20 to 25 minutes telling you a bit about myself. Is that okay? Is there a lot of feedback? So we'll keep going. So I'm gonna spend the next 20 to 25 minutes telling you a bit about myself, how I got interested in slugs, what are the main pest slug species I've been finding as I've been traveling around the state. But I'd also like to tell you a bit about my vision for controlling these pests in Oregon agriculture. So some of you have probably picked up from my accent, I'm not from the United States. I was actually born in Ireland. In a small town in the center of the country called Athlone. It's located on the banks of the largest river in the country. If any of you have been to Ireland and you've traveled from Dublin in the east to Galway in the west, you'll almost certainly have passed through my town. I went to university on the west coast at the National University of Ireland in Galway, where I completed a BSc in environmental science. And also a PhD at the same university. But for my PhD, I was very interested in working on a group of insects, a very interesting group of insects that feed almost exclusively on slugs and snails. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about more of them later on. For the past 5 years, I worked at the University of California in Riverside, where I was developing novel approaches for managing slugs and snails within crops. And that type of research is going to be a primary component of my research program at Oregon State University. Now, a question I'm often asked at events like this is, Rory, how did you end up working on such disgusting organisms as snails and slugs? That's a very good question. I first became interested in slugs when I was a young lad growing up back in Ireland. I had a very, very good collection of natural history books, largely thanks to my dad. And I remember very, very well reading in one of these books that slugs and snails could crawl easily over broken glass, and they have teeth sharper than those of a shark. So when you're young and you're already interested in natural history, these sorts of facts tend to get you completely hooked. And I guess I've never really looked back. Today, their repulsive nature kind of has made them something of a celebrity, I would say. And there have been many movies and even books which have had slugs or slug-like characters or creatures as their central characters. Now, believe it or not, slugs have also given rise to a number of phobias. And a quick check in the American Journal of Clinical Hypnosis shows that there have been many, many cases where prolonged hypnotherapy is needed by some patients to actually overcome their fear of these organisms. But of course, slugs are most famous for being pests, and they act as pests on a number of different levels. Firstly, most species are direct pests of agriculture. In fact, many of the plants that we grow are fed on by slugs, so we're really in a kind of a constant battle with these organisms, and it's one that we're struggling to win. Slugs can also vector many damaging plant diseases, and chalkgrass is an obvious one. And they can transmit human pathogens as well. That's something that people aren't aware of. For example, about 10 years ago in California, there was a highly publicized and massive recall of fecally contaminated spinach and other salad crops that were grown throughout the state. Now, scientists think that slug were partially responsible for this recall, and because they think the slugs were helping to transport the bacteria from one plant to another. And of course, we know that slugs cause aesthetic damage as well by depositing feces and also mucus onto plants, and that greatly reduces the market value. So one of the things that I've been trying to do since I got here is to try to get a handle on what are the main pest species that are causing the problems in Oregon agriculture as I've been traveling around the state. Unsurprisingly, it's the invasive slugs, and the vast majority are accidental introductions from Europe. Most of these probably hitchhiked here, many of them imported plants, but also some of them almost certainly arrived on imported shipments of tiles from the Mediterranean part of Europe. I don't have time, obviously, to go through each and every single one of these species with you today. So instead, what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk to you about some of the more interesting and some of the more important ones. My talk is going to focus primarily on slugs, but I do want to highlight this snail species as well. It's called the European brown garden snail, and it's without question the most important and most damaging snail species here in Oregon. It's a very serious pest in nursery production, particularly on the coast. The snail first appeared in the United States on the West Coast, I believe it was in California, in the 1800s. It was introduced as a source of food, but the early settlers really didn't develop a taste for it, and it ultimately escaped into the wild. This snail will feed on dead plants and on living plants, and it's got a bizarre mating behavior. Two mating snails will repeatedly stab each other with calcium darts. You can see the snail in the bottom left has gotten completely skewered with one of these darts from the snail on the right. I'm guessing you recognize this slug. This is the gray field slug, and not only is it the most damaging slug species in Oregon, it's one of the most damaging slug species throughout the world. It's found in a huge range of environments, and it's a very, very serious pest of a wide, wide range of crops, so everything from grass seed to clover, fruits, vegetables, and even grain crops as well. If you grow plants of any kind, I guarantee you you've had this slug at some stage, without question. Quite an easy slug to identify, because when it's disturbed, it secretes a milky-colored mucus. And it should be possible to see the milky-colored mucus here on that specimen. That's an easy way to identify it. The white salt slug, this is a slug that has started to become a problem in Oregon over the past decade or so. I found large numbers of it on the edges of grass seed fields, also on the edges of clover fields. Again, relatively easy to identify this slug, as its name suggests. The underside of the foot is a white color, and that's very unusual for slugs. Usually the underside of the foot is yellow or brown or a kind of an off red color. I've also found this slug in quite large numbers in urban gardens, in urban parks, and in woodlands throughout the state as well. The marsh slug is another species that I found quite commonly in grass seed fields and in clover seeds, particularly in the Willamette Valley. It's a small brown slug. It's got very, very watery mucus. It's also amphibious, so this slug does particularly well in the wetter parts of fields. Also a very, very aggressive slug. It'll readily lash other slugs with its tail, almost knocking them out, and it'll readily bite other slugs that come too close to it. So this is a very aggressive slug species. You probably recognize this one as well. This is called a European red slug, and it's the largest invasive slug that I found here in Oregon. To identify it, you can see the front end is much darker than the rest of the body. And also the foot fringe, this nice orange fringe on the slug has got distinct black lines. This slug is very common in field edges, but also in disturbed areas as well. And it's got a voracious appetite for living plants. Surprisingly, this slug is unusually common in campgrounds throughout the state, and we think the reason for that is because it's been inadvertently transported on the underside of tents from one campsite to another. Also, when disturbed, this slug rocks back and forth. The last slug that I just want to talk to you briefly about today is a real oddity. This slug is called the shell slug, and it's one of the very, very few species that actually has an external shell. It spends most of its time underground and rarely comes to the ground surface. And for that reason, it's not seen very, very often. It's also a carnivore, and it feeds on primarily on earthworms, but it'll also feed on other slugs, other soft-bodied invertebrates, and on invertebrate eggs as well. And because it doesn't feed on living plant material, this slug generally is not considered to be a pest. But in saying that, we do not know what the impact of this invasive slug is on potentially beneficial earthworm populations. Okay, so now that we have a little bit of an idea about what the main pest slug species are in the state, I want to talk to you very briefly about current control options. As most of you know, and most of you are very well aware, the mainstay of pest slug control, not only here in Oregon, but throughout the world, is the use of chemical molluscicides. But the efficacy of molluscicides is very, very variable, and it's also dependent quite heavily on environmental conditions. So things like soil moisture content, soil temperature, air temperature, and even wind speed as well. Tillage can also be effective at reducing slug numbers, but with the current drive towards no-till and conservation tillage practices, growers are becoming more reluctant to use it. Other approaches, of course, are hand picking, the use of traps, the use of barriers, but these are all impractical for large areas. So, as you can see, and as most of you are well aware, control options for slugs are very, very, very limited. And there's a huge need to develop alternative and novel approaches to manage these pests in agriculture. And that's the reason why I was hired by Oregon State. So over the coming years, my research team and I, we're going to be investigating a wide range of new strategies to help us manage slug pests in agricultural crops. Today, because I want to leave ample time for questions, I'm going to talk to you about just two of these approaches, some of the work I've done in the past and how that can be applicable to the situation here in Oregon. And those two approaches are, the first one will be the development of novel attractants, and the second is biological control using natural enemies. Now, my past research on novel attractants is centered around one of the most damaging snail species in the world. It's called the giant African land snail. You can see it's a very, very appropriate term. These snails on the right, when they're fully grown and are crawling, they're well over 1 foot in length. These snails are a huge problem in Hawaii and in Florida, and the snails will feed on over 500 different species of plants. Believe it or not, they'll even take stucco off walls, and they transmit a microscopic worm that can cause a potentially fatal form of meningitis in humans. So these snails are really, really bad news. I'm glad to report I have not found them in Oregon, but the US Department of Agriculture have identified areas in the United States where this snail could become a problem in the future. And as you can see from this map, Western Oregon, unfortunately, is at risk. So this is a snail species we may have to deal with in the future. A couple of years ago, a colleague in California and I, we were approached by the US Department of Agriculture to try and develop novel attractants to help manage this pest in Florida and in Hawaii. And we were particularly interested in trying to identify a highly attractive food source because we felt we could get some solid results quite quickly. Last year, we identified a food extract that appeared to be super attractive to the snails. You can see in the bottom right photograph, the snails are crawling all over each other to get to this piece of paper where I placed a few drops of the extract. In fact, at one stage, the snails were tree deep trying to get to this piece of paper. So it was very, very impressive. One of the things that I wanted to do was to test the extract in the field, because I wanted to be sure that wild snails were also attracted to it. So I set up 96 plots, like the one I've shown on the slide, 48 for the extract and 48 for a water control. At two sites in Hilo, Hawaii, where there are huge populations of this snail to work with. In each of the plots, I also placed a piece of cotton that was soaked with either the extract or the water, and I also broadcast some metaldehyde because I wanted to be sure any snails coming into the plots during the course of the night would be killed. So what did I find? Well, as you can see from this table, almost double the number of giant African snails were collected in the extract plot compared to the water plots. We also found that this, it's called a semi-slug. It's an Asian semi-slug. It's halfway between a slug and a snail, hence its name. We also found that this species appeared to be very attracted to the extract as well. And again, we collected about twice as many in the extract plots compared to the water plots. So this was pretty solid evidence that the extract was also attractive to snails in the wild. And that's a very, very important result because as scientists, a lot of the work we do in the laboratory often doesn't mirror the picture that we see in the field. But thankfully, in this case, it did. The fact that the extract was attractive to other species, like the Asian semi-slug, really wasn't something that we were expecting. It was a pleasant surprise. But it might suggest that the extract is attractive to a wide range of snail and slug species. Now, interestingly, the extract also appeared to increase the efficacy of the metaldehyde by attracting the snails and semi-slugs into areas where the molluscicide had been broadcast. And that's got important implications for the control of these species. So, for example, if we can attract slugs and snails from distance into traps or into killing zones within fields or within crops, then it might be possible to reduce extensive broadcast applications of molluscicide, decrease non-target effects, and ultimately increase the efficacy of existing baits. So to build on this research, I've got a scientist working with me at Oregon State who's trying to identify novel attractants for the gray field slug. Now remember, this is the species that's causing the most problems here in Oregon. Unfortunately, the extract which we've identified for the giant African snail does not appear to be very attractive to this species. So Maria is just finishing up a whole range of tests with the goal of trying to identify another highly attractive food source. Another management tool that I'm very interested in developing here in Oregon is biological control, which is the use of a natural enemy to control a pest. When it comes to snails and slugs, biological control is very much under-researched throughout the United States, despite the fact that slugs have a diverse range of natural enemies. And in Europe, a commercially available biological control agent is being used by growers to help manage slugs in crops. That European product is called Nemaslug, and the active agent is a nematode called Phasmerhabditis hermaphrodita. And it's lethal to a wide range of pest slugs, but also some snails as well. The product itself, it consists of about 12 million infective juvenile nematodes mixed with clay. Super easy to use it. You simply mix the clay with water, and then you apply it to the soil in your target area. The nice thing about Nemaslug is that it's only lethal to slugs and snails, and it can be very, very effective. So in the UK, there's been an 89% reduction in slug damage to winter wheat. And in the Netherlands, slug damage to orchids is consistently reduced by over 95% when Nemaslug is used. So I'm guessing you're wondering, where can you get your hands on some of this stuff? Well, unfortunately, you can't, because Nemaslug is not currently available in the United States because the nematode has never been found here. Well, never been found here, hasn't been found here up until recently. About 3 years ago, some colleagues and I, we actually discovered Phasmerhabditis in multiple slug species from multiple locations in Northern California. This is what an infested slug typically looks like. The tissue has started to liquefy, and there are thousands of nematodes like this one swimming through and feeding on the decomposing flesh. We now have colonies of the US strain of this nematode. And my colleagues are testing the infectivity of the nematode against a wide range of pest slug and snail species. And to date, the results have been quite encouraging. So at the minute, we know that it will kill the grey field slug, the marsh slug, and something called the Valencia slug, which is a pest in nursery production, the European brown garden snail, and even juvenile giant African land snails as well. And these are all severe pests. So in my opinion, nematodes are likely to be a very, very important tool for managing slug pests here in Oregon in the future. And I say that for a number of reasons. Firstly, a preliminary screening of slugs and snails collected throughout the state yielded 7 nematode species, including the one I've shown on the slide. This nematode is also a known slug killer as well. The preliminary survey did not find Phasmorhabditis, unfortunately, but I would be very, very surprised if Phasmorhabditis is not present in Oregon, especially when you consider that we collected multiple specimens from multiple locations in Northern California. In fact, one of the sites was less than 100 miles from the state border. But even if we don't find Phasmorhabditis here, there are many, many nematode species, like the one on the slide, that have lots of potential to be used as biological control agents against slug pests in crops. Secondly, the low light levels and wet weather that promote high slug populations during the fall in Western Oregon are also optimum conditions for these nematodes. So the climate here should support biological control efforts, and that's an important point. And lastly, and probably most importantly, these nematodes have demonstrated efficacy in Europe for managing slugs in a wide range of crops. And before I finish up, I want to talk to you very, very briefly about another group of invertebrates. They're called shade flies. And they're unique amongst insects in that the larval or maggot stage is a voracious predator of slugs and snails. There's even some evidence to suggest that if you have these insects on your land or in a field, the slug populations will be less in that field compared to a field where they are absent. So I'm obviously very keen to get my hands on some of these insects. And from what I can gather, there appears to be about 50 species known from the state. But surprisingly, we know very, very little about their biology, and that's something that I'd like to address over the coming years. So to conclude, I'd like to say that my opinion, I do not believe that there is a quick fix or a single silver bullet strategy for managing slug pests in Oregon agriculture. I think the key to future success will be the development of novel approaches like the ones I've just outlined, but using those in conjunction with existing strategies in an integrated pest management approach. And I believe if that's the approach we take, we'll be able to make significant inroads into the problem in the future. If anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to take them. My email address is on the slide. Please feel free to get in touch if you have any questions. I'm also going to be around until lunchtime today, so feel free to come up and say hello. I've recently set up a Twitter feed for those of you who are into social media, where I'm going to be providing updates on my research program and also relevant research from other parts of the world that might be applicable to the situation here in Oregon. I think there should be time for questions. I purposely left some time. So thank you. Yeah. That's a very good question. I don't think anybody has looked at the impact of the nematodes on slug eggs. I'm not sure they have the capability to burrow into slug eggs. Slug eggs are often a kind of a gelatinous mass. But if when the eggs hatch, the nematodes will certainly take out the juvenile slugs that come out. But whether they feed on slug eggs, I don't know. If you look at the product in Europe, they say that they last for up to 8 weeks in the field. But again, that needs to be treated with a bit of caution. The situation here in Oregon might be a little different. I suspect it probably will be longer here in Oregon. As I said, the conditions here are absolutely ideal, particularly during the fall and winter months, for these nematodes to hang around. If there's sufficient slugs and if the conditions are suitable, there's no reason to think that it could last beyond 8 weeks in the field. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you look at That's a very, yeah, good question. We not yet. Personally, I haven't. I have a student in who I worked with in Ireland who's interested in coming here to work with me on ground beetles. One of the things about ground beetles is that there's a general opinion that all ground beetles will feed on slugs and snails, and that's not true. And there are some species that will, others won't. So one of the things we would like to do, if this student can come and work with me, if we can get some funding for, is to figure out what those species are. If we know what the species are that are killing slugs, then we can manipulate the habitat to attract them in, something like beetle banks, for example, which are used in the UK. Yeah, so it's definitely an option for the future. Yeah, and that's a good point. And one of the difficulties with the product in Europe is that it is expensive. I can't remember exactly, you know, what the cost is, but it is very, very expensive. And if you look at the prices in Europe, those prices are geared towards the home garden market. I'm pretty certain BASF, who market and produce the nematode, also supply it in very, very large quantities to growers in different parts of Europe who've got huge acreages like many of you guys do. And I think if you buy that product in bulk, the price would come down. But even if the price does come down, it will be a more expensive strategy than using chemical molluscicides, for sure. And there are ways which you can, I guess, bring the cost down even more, have more targeted applications. So for example, use some sources of cover like blanket traps and just apply the nematode underneath the blanket traps, because the slugs will return to these sources of cover on a nightly basis or every morning. So if you've got the nematodes there, you'll probably get good kill rates as well. So there are ways to bring the cost down, but I think ultimately it will still be more expensive than molluscicides. Okay, thank you very much, everyone.